The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
And welcome back to K4 Wins. My name is Tony Curry. Let's go around the horn. Case Kiefer, executive director, editor of the Las Vegas Sun. He's out there in the desert, getting a little hot out there right below me. Kip Kiefer, executive director of the Birmingham Racecourse Casino, recently purchased by the Quartz Creek Indians. They have a place in Aruba, don't they, Kip? Can we go to Aruba?
Yeah, they have Aruba and Curacao, so I think it's a Caribbean tourism order.
I'm thinking K4 Wins in Aruba next summer. You guys in? And, of course, Kai Gregory, first and most just wonderful sponsor of Tony Curry Radio and just a good friend of mine, but also a guy who's been working both sides of sport for a long time, knows everything about handicapping. It's been his hot streaks for sure, and he joins us as well right here for K4 Wins. K4 Wins, check us out, k4wins.com, k4wins.com, also on Twitter, known as X now, K4 Winners. Make sure you capitalize that K and that W, K4 Winners, on Twitter, and coming soon on X as well as Facebook and Instagram. We'll get it all taken care of. First of all, guys, you guys doing okay? We missed you earlier this week. We obviously had some things going on, but nice to come on a Friday. We got a full weekend of great sports, and it's never too early to talk about some college football, particularly down here in the South and out in the West, because we're going to be getting into some win totals and a couple of totals really kind of like head scratchers for me. But how's everyone doing this morning?
Doing great. Ready for football.
Fantastic. We'll get into some Major League Baseball. Yanks, Tigers, Astros, Mets, Cubs, Dodgers all leading their divisions. We got a couple teams that are extremely hot, a couple that are extremely cold. The Dodgers are playing really, really well. And several teams that I've been keeping track of, haven't really delved into Major League betting a lot. Kyle, let's start with you a little bit. What's been some of the high streaks, low streaks, right after you tell us how we did last week on K4 Wins?
Last week again, back-to-back 20 and 11 weeks. You got an interesting stat here. So for the year, we're 547 and 286. Back-to-back 3-1 days. Yes, all those plays were posted on X also. But we started this last year August 1st. So what would y'all think our record is, guys, if you go back? We haven't quite made it a year yet. But what would y'all think we are, right at 11 months?
Percentage-wise?
No, just overall. What do you think we've done? I just told you this year, 547 and 286.
We got to be on the verge of 1,000 wins.
Yeah.
972, yep. 526, and 28. We got 28 wins to get us to the 1,000 plateau. We're going to do that in July, have 1,000 wins that we will have put out, versus the under 600 losses, I would say, in a year.
That is a great
percent so far.
That is a great stat and a great way to jump right into, before I get to your baseball, because I wanted to ask Case about this. If you listen to our show, K4 Wins, we've all gambled. We've all dabbled in it for years. We probably have over 120 years of experience in it. The wife doesn't care if you gamble as long as you win, guys.
Yeah.
Go out there and get it done. Play all you want. But when you're coming home and you come home with cash, she loves it. When you come home a loser, she don't like this gambling thing you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Tony's right, too, about that. It's not the gambling. It's the losing they don't like.
You come home with cheese, and she don't mind you going out behind the barn while the kids are playing Little League on Saturdays watching football on four different TVs, I promise you, as long as you're coming home with some cash. But I wanted to ask Case, because Case, typically during college football season, how many bets do you make in a week?
Just on college football, or
just on college football? We're going to go college football because a lot of guys don't even play anything during the summer. But we'll say college football. But typically, how many bets do you make in a week in a regular college football week?
Yeah, I'd say I answer this similarly every time, but it really comes up to the individual person, and there's really a debate or just how it comes to people that are doing this, seriously for a job. There's guys that just make a few huge bets a week and are only trying to look for those big edges. Or there's people that like to compound their volume and every edge they find like to put a little bit. I'm more in the latter category. I just found it suited me better. I don't think we want to get into the math and the Kelly criteria and everything, but I think if any real professional gambler looked at my books and looked what I do, they'd say I'm severely underbetting, that I'm not betting enough.
You're underbetting.
As far as the stake,
Okay.
I mean, this could go down so many rabbit holes. I would say number one, since we kind of got into the responsible gaming discussion and bringing home money or not, I would say the biggest thing for me when I started taking it seriously that I would recommend everyone do is just establish your own bankroll separate from your life expenses and everything. Like, I have money that is really just, you know, I don't know. I don't want to get into too many specifics, but
yeah.
I just say establish a bankroll. Put your money aside and say, this is my money for betting. If you have some success, you can start paying yourself, treat it like a business. But yeah. I just recommend not even having the two intersect with each other. And really, if you want to be betting correctly, you should be betting probably about 1 or 2% of your bankroll on every bet you make. I'm less than that because, again, I found that volume suits me better. I feel like I like compiling these small edges, and over time, it's gonna win me more. So, you know, that's a long-winded say to say during college football, I probably have 30 or 40 bets a weekend just on college football. I could get you the exact numbers. You give me a week, I can spreadsheet from last week. But something like that, I would say that is way more than average, especially even people like me that are doing this professionally or semi-professionally. You'll ask some guys and they'll say 4 or 5. But I like firing a lot because, again, I feel like I do have an edge, especially in college football. So
Yeah, well, the thought is by firing off more games, obviously, you don't play games in hopes you're going to lose. But when you play games, you're thinking if you're going to lose the juice, that's going to help or, you know, mess up your bottom line. So I've always come, and I think you're freezing up, so hopefully we'll catch you back. But I've always come from the idea, or at least I've been told by the idea, at least by my books, that you're playing too many games, that the only way you can win is not to play, just play your best games. And of course, undoubtedly, you end up playing the ones that end up losing, and the ones that you end up winning, you didn't play because you didn't feel as good about them. How does that work out? And hope to get Case back on here in just a second. We'll get him back on. I'll ask you, Kip, what's your thoughts on, and I know you've dabbled in the sport a little bit yourself, but what do you do when you've gotten 10 different games you want to play, but you're thinking to yourself, you have to look at that bottom line. Say you're a $200 better and you're putting $200 out and you got 10 games, you lose, you're losing $2,200. Most people can't lose that in a weekend.
Yeah, that's tough. I think to expand on Case's point, if you've done the work and you really feel good about something and you think you've got an edge in terms of what the line says, I think that's the time. And if the little bit I've dabbled in, and you guys are more regular players than I am, I find that I get too emotionally involved. So I've got a lot of expertise on talking about the games and what everybody else should do, but I don't have a lot of practical experience myself because I just don't really play much week to week. I got a lot of other things going on, and I would be a lot more into this if I had a lot more time and was more of a full-time person, because I think I could grind out because I'm pretty disciplined. But the bottom line is when you really find a line or a total that you have done the research and you feel good about, I like what Kay said, that when he feels like he's got an edge, that's the time to go ahead and exploit as many of those as you can. And when he said, you know, he would be considered an underbetter, because he's talking about the amount that he's playing. Yeah. So that's just some of the basic principles that make sense to me.
Kaya, what's your thoughts on this? Because I know you've played both sides for years and years and years, and you probably lick your chops when you see a guy calling in with 15 or 16 bets on a Saturday. And, you know, when you K4Wins.com, and we talk about sometimes we have too many plays to put up. I mean, if you're giving out 15, 16 plays, you can't assume that all of the people that are subscribing to our site are going to be able to play all those games, or they're going to play them incrementally to see how they're doing throughout the day, which is also a dangerous way of playing sometimes.
Well, I think part of it goes into, you know, one of the reasons why we created this. And people need to understand, you know, some of the things we do are teaching you how to bet or help yourself. There's a huge difference in a professional gambler like Case. I mean, I know he has another job, but he's basically a professional gambler.
Sure.
Versus somebody that's doing this on the weekends for fun, looks up there and sees, oh, the Yankees are playing the A's. The Yankees are minus 200. It's a guaranteed win. No, it's not. that's a big difference. Me, I've always been lower volume. And what you have to do if you're doing this, if you're you're just doing this for fun, you've got to understand you should not be betting $200 a game. Period. If you're not making $250,000 a year, you have no business betting $200 a game. Just period, because especially if you're doing something where you're online. I mean, if you're going to do something like that, you need to be somewhere where you have deposited your money and you can't get yourself in trouble versus going and chasing and getting deep, in my opinion. You have to understand that there are going to be losing weekends. And a lot of people that are doing it on their own and do not research and just go and look and, oh, Alabama's a 14-point favorite, you know, and understated, and they lost three games total when they were 14-point favorites. So I'm going to put, you know, $1,000 on them minus $1,000 to win $100. Well, guess what? Under DeBoer, they lost as many games last year as 14-point favorites as they did under Saban his, 16 years he was there?
However
many? So you lost a ton of money, and if you were betting them money line all the time, you lost more money those three games than you won the rest of the season betting the money line on them. So people have to look at those kind of things and understand what they're doing versus just throwing money at something and going, now, here's an instance for you. I know a person, and this is years ago, it's probably 30 years ago almost, when Colorado was just an up-and-coming franchise. They played the Yankees. They're in Colorado. They had the Yankees first game minus 300. They bet $300 on it. Well, you bet 300 minus 300, you lose $900. Okay, well, the Yankees lost game one to Colorado. Game two, they said, okay, well, they're not going to lose two games in a row to Colorado. They suck. So what did they do? They bet them again minus 300 for $900. And guess what?
Ouch.
They lost $2,700. Now they're down $3,600. Game three, no way they're going to lose again. What did they do? They bet $3,000 on Colorado minus 300. They lost $9,000. Three games. Down 10 grand over their limit. You just have to be smarter than that.
Yeah, I used to have a friend of mine who was he would just double up. He just kept doubling up till he finally won. And you get the point where you're 10, 15 grand, and some guys won't take your bets. They're like, you know what? You can double up all you want, but you ain't doing it here. You know, I need to see something first. Case, good to have you back on real quick. We were talking about the number of games, and I just want to get your thoughts on this because we want to throw a little nugget out every time we're on the air on K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com, K4Winners on X, because we want people to make money. You can do this. You are a professional gambler. And that's how you make your living, first and foremost, being chief editor of the Las Vegas Sun. That's why you write what you do, and that's why you're so good and why you have so many followers and why you're on this show, because you are the linchpin, you are the cornerstone for this show for sure, because you know more than anyone. But, I mean, when you're talking about playing a lot of games, just for fun, say I've got a bankroll of $5,000, I'm going to the football season, you are talking about the 1% or 2% or whatever. And I want it to last throughout the year. And I want to win. If I'm following K4Wins, I know I'm going to win 3 out of 4 weeks, if not 4 out of 4 weeks. So maybe at the end of the football season, I'm going to have a little extra cash for the holiday season. Maybe I could put that in my bankroll next year. But how many games should I be playing?
Yeah, if you have $5,000, you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good to be back. Sorry, that sounds a little bit different. I blame Tony. I didn't fall out at all last week. Tony comes back and I'm in and out. So, yeah, I don't know if you heard me. I said I bet 30 or 40 games. And I also want to make one other big asterisk to that. When I say I'm betting 30 or 40 games, I'm not exaggerating. Over three-fourths of them are on, like, Monday or Tuesday. I'm opening when I'm firing when the markets are soft before thousands of dollars, not even thousands in football, and millions of dollars are coming in. Most people are betting at the last minute, and these markets are extremely sharp. It's so hard to beat if you're betting at the last minute. So to go back to your question about if you have a $5,000 bankroll, I mean, I would go to that 1%. If you have $5,000 to bet on college football season, I'd recommend betting $50 a game. And, you know, I know I always beat this drum. So if you've listened to our show before, you've probably heard me, but I would say to try to bet earlier or at least track. You know, the hardest thing I think for people that try to take this more seriously is sometimes you just have to look beyond the results. I mean, we see crazy things happen in sports all the time. To me, what's even more important than my win-loss record or my ROI on the week is my closing line value. You want to make sure you're beating the number. If you bet Alabama, in Kai's example, I guess, minus 14 and they close minus 10.5, you made a horrendous bet. And even if you win that, you're going to lose over time. However, if you bet them minus 14 and they close 17, that's great. And it's easy to convert to a percentage. You could just probably Google closing line value calculator and you can find that. So I would say that the biggest thing to help you win money, I would say pay attention to the market, not just the results. The market is just as important. Try to bet earlier. And bet within your means. And I think the 5,000 is an easy example. I would tell people to bet $55 a game, however many you're comfortable with in that scenario.
Kai, while we're learning something here, let's take it a step further. Parlays, teases, turns. Yes, no, maybe, sometimes.
And they're called a tease for a reason, just point blank. You know, you get into something like that, and hey, everybody loves a good parlay, especially when you like those big money lines. But I will tell you this, bookies love when people call or when they hop on and they bet teasers and they bet parlays. Whether it's 4 point, 6 point, 10 point, 12 point, is there some value in there from time to time? I'm not going to say no to that, but a tease is a sucker bet, in my opinion. You know, college football, NFL football, you get 10 points on these, and everybody's like, oh, well, it's only minus 130 on this juice. I get 10 points with all these teams. I know what's going to happen. No, what you do is you go and you put three 10-point teasers in, and the same team screws you in all three, and you just lost, you know, $360 because, you know, Buffalo decided to not kick an extra point or shank an extra point, and instead of you covering that four when they were minus 14, they won by three.
Yep.
Yeah. And Kip, I want to go to you too, because when we talk about parlays, man, you're a horse racing guy. You are a pick six. You are, I mean, that's basically, it's parlay and horse racing.
It is.
How do you play that? You play individually and parlays over the course, because that's where you can make your money.
Well, in horse racing, you always are undone, because, and I love this about horse racing. I really hate it, but I'm trying to like it. But when a 30-1 piece of garbage wins a race in the middle of your pick five, the announcer's going, and he's 30-1, like everybody's excited about that. He should be going, I'm sorry, everybody. This piece of shit's 30-1. It just... I probably shouldn't have said that on the air, but
that's okay.
But anyway, I want Case to speak to this, because he had the privilege or the opportunity 2 years ago to embed in the back rooms of the sports of the biggest sports, the Superbook, at what used to be the Hilton and now is the Westgate. And Case can tell you what their opinion about parlays are. So Case, give them a quick rundown of that experience.
Yeah, well, this is I got to call Kip out. It's once per show. He madly underestimates time. I think that was 6 or 7 years ago at this point, 6 or 7 NFL seasons ago. But, yeah, it was a really almost a transformative experience for me. I did sit with him a whole Sunday, watched all the action come in, just got a really good, I think, a better understanding, even though I had been covering sports betting and doing it semi-seriously for about 10 years at that point. You know, really seeing the other perspective of a mega book that just has bets pouring in all the time. It was transformative in a lot of ways. But yeah, as far as parlays, I got to say, I mean, it's overwhelming, and I think it's even more gotten to that level now with same game parlays. That's just all that comes in, and of course, that's what I mean. The bookmakers have absolutely no problem. I mean, if you actually do the math and look at the edges, or if you even just, you know, you don't even have to do the math, you just look at the reports. Like in Nevada, there's a lot of transparency. Every month, the Gaming Control Board releases figures. Every month, their biggest hold by far, it's like 25+% always on parlays, because that's what it is. I mean, they're already taking 10 cents out of every bet you make. You add them together, it just compounds the house edge. That's exactly what they want you to do. Now, I never want to say never. You know, there's guys, if you're really good at a sport and you are beating the closing number a lot and you do have an edge, sometimes there are ways you can weaponize parlays to actually where the numbers are in your favor, and especially parlay and teaser cards in Vegas that don't change. However, the sports books will frown upon that. And, you know, kind of a whole nother avenue that's tricky in this day and age with gambling is keeping accounts and not getting kicked out places. So they're not going to look fondly on that. But yeah, I mean, it's as simple as looking at what they win the most on every month, and every month it's parlays. They're taking a ton of action that way. I know it's tantalizing. Everyone loves the lottery mentality of bet a little to make a lot. But I mean, more than 98% of the time, you'd be better off just betting these games single than firing on parlays and teasers. And just last thing, I understand that, you know, that's how a lot of people like to bet, and it's fun. And I'm not one to tell people, you know, what to do if that's their entertainment value. But I would just go into it not thinking, oh, I'm going to get rich off of this. Like go in with the mentality of, oh, this is going to make the games a little bit more fun to watch today, because long-term, you're not going to win betting parlays or teasers long-term, in my opinion.
K4wins.com, K4wins.com on X at K4winners. Capitalize that K, and that W is funny because I've had, first of all, whenever I play teasers, and I haven't played one in a long time, but it seems like whenever I play, I would have won the game outright anyway. The tease normally never has any play in it. I can't remember ever having a three-team or two-team tease where I actually need the points. In other words, I would have won the game outright. The other thing is I got a guy, a friend of mine, who drives guys crazy because he plays 5-10 games a play, and I think he's now doing stuff online. And he plays 5, 6, 7 team parlays, and he's really good at hockey. And of course, the hockey season, we got a couple of guys on here that know hockey better than anybody. And he would hit 4 to 6 every night. And I'm like, dude, just play him straight. Play him, just $5 a game, play him straight. I mean, if you're going to be hitting 4 to 6 every single night, you're going to be a winner. So get after it. All right, let's talk some.
Two final thoughts that I think could really help on this subject. If you have to bet parlays, I would recommend to play moneyline parlays over the point spreads. You know, the edge compounds less if you're getting the better of the money line. So I do think money lines are a little bit, again, this is not something I do normally, but I do think adding those money line parlays to bet is better than spreads. And as far as teasers, and it's like zero, I would never almost bet a teaser in college football. You know, college football, the total's like usually 2 touchdowns more than the NFL. The value of points, there's just such a wide range of outcomes. College football, the math just does not add up. I would never do teasers. There are still some cases where it's okay in the NFL. If you can get through the 3 and the 7, especially if you're a local guy or some books are still offering -110, I mean, that's a long time. Sharp guys have made their living off of this. I think it's okay if you're getting through those key numbers, but you don't want to go more than like -120, and that is becoming nearly extinct as the sports books get a little bit smarter and realize it's not a great bet. So college football, stay away from the teasers. NFL, you can convince me in some cases it's all right.
Hey, Kai, real quick, before we get into Major League Baseball, I've been pushing this off all show. We got plenty of time here. Your final thoughts on the NBA playoffs. I love to look back, particularly at a 7-game series. What did we learn about the series? Were we wrong? Were we right? What were your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, we posted over 5.5 and over 6.5. We posted Indiana +2.5, Indiana +1.5, and I went ahead and posted Indiana a little bit there. So we did really well. You know, you got a 7-game series, and it's 4-3. So we did well. I think you learned that. You know, I'm not going to get deep into this, but I disagree that with the NBA, since it's ended and with the way Tyrese Halliburton went down, they're all talking about now trying to condense things, get them into 5-game series, not go as long in the playoffs. Well, I mean, you don't necessarily have to have an 82-game season. It's just like, you know, the NFL, now that they're, 18 games, and they're talking about 20 games, and we've gone from a 14, 15, 16-game schedule, now to 18 and doing all these things. You know, these guys are paid millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to play this sport. Injuries happen. And they're going to happen whether they're playing a 60-game season, an 82-game season. I mean, it's freak accidents. And I know Tyrese Halliburton probably should not have played. They knew when he got hurt what was going to end up happening. They knew he was going to tear his Achilles. Yeah, I mean, it was obvious to everybody. We were waiting on it to happen. And it happened, so don't be surprised by it. But anyway, I'll move on, get off of that. I think we learned that Indy was probably as good as Case thought they were during the season that he talked about. And I think that we learned that OKC was the best team in the NBA. And final NBA thought is, I'm going to laugh if the Lakers don't bring LeBron back with their new ownership.
Yeah.
Okay. Kip, you were going to interject there for a second.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, we said it on this show. I think Kai himself said it. If you play with a calf injury, you're almost putting all your chips on. You're going to tear your Achilles. And then, damn, if it's the 2 days later, it's Halliburton diagnosed with a torn Achilles. So, I mean, it's just common sense. If you're playing on a bad leg, that you're going to put more pressure on a vulnerable spot. So I the irony in that was not lost on me, because that's exactly what happened.
Case, I can only assume that Las Vegas did okay in the series.
That's a good question. I would have to. I don't know. I know the Indiana bets were super popular. I saw like one of the big sports books here, one of the national ones, sent out like the most popular bets, and I think it was like Indiana +2.5. So I think they probably lost like on the spreads. I got to think for the year as a whole. I mean, it was pretty obvious Oklahoma City was a wagon early on. So I got to think futures wise, maybe it wasn't a great result, but I'd be surprised if they didn't win a little bit. Although I think dragging it this long from some of the numbers I saw was probably not the best result for the house.
All right, Kyle, let's talk some Major League Baseball. Yanks, Tigers, Astros, Mets, Cubs, Dodgers lead their divisions right now. Any particular looking spreads, lines, streaks that you've been looking at over the last couple of weeks that are amazing to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, so one team in Major League Baseball has 19 wins by 5 runs or more. their leading Major League Baseball guy. Who is it? Tony Curry, useless stat. Who can get it right without looking, Case?
I'm not looking. Tigers.
Yep, Detroit. Yep. 19 wins by 5 runs or more this year, wow. Which is one of the reasons why. But believe it or not, they don't have the best record, best home record in baseball anymore. That is now the Houston Astros at 30-13.
Who I don't think are that good, but but Houston finds a way to win. I don't think their roster is that talented, but they're finding ways to win.
This is the second straight year where they've had the best record in June. They're just unbeatable in June, so it's ridiculous. I hate them. So I'm very much against them this year as well, but they've been hot. And again, I promise I did not cheat on that. I was calling up my MLB stuff, but I was not looking. It really feels like the Tigers win. I think they won 8-0 yesterday. It seems like they win by that much every other day. It's been pretty amazing. I'm kicking myself. I don't have any anti-Tigers positions, but I feel like I should have seen this coming. The way they came on last year, had so many young guys. I think in hindsight, I'm disappointed I wasn't on the Tigers more.
We did have Detroit yesterday. That was one of our plays that we had talked about. And I really like them at home a lot. On the road, they're still getting it done. The pitcher they brought back yesterday hadn't pitched in 4 years. Went 5 innings, gave up a hit. Finn, I think it was. Pitch yesterday. I can't remember the name. But he went 5 innings. I think he gave up a walk and a hit. And got a win his first time back in the major league. And when you're, that's pretty easy to do if you can be confident as a pitcher to go out there when your team's putting 8 runs up for you. It makes everything easier. Looking at some of the run differential stuff that we always talk about, Tony, but you got, like I said, the best record, home record in baseball is Houston, the worst home record, obviously Colorado. Best road record is Detroit and Chicago, the Cubs, not the White Sox. The worst road record is there. Your White Sox there. Only one team is left with a negative run differential with a winning record. Any guesses?
I'd want to say my Reds just because I know they've lost 1-0 like 17 times this year, but it's not.
Toronto, 43-37, and they are -1.
Wow.
Just for some useless things for Kip there. Atlanta 37-43, but they are +21 runs.
Yeah,
this is 40-41 +18. Boston is 40-42 +7. Who has the best run differential and the worst run differential in the MLB? One of the guesses. Best run differential.
The Dodgers pitching is not for
Yankees +110 runs.
Wow.
The worst is easy.
Rockies for sure.
Yeah.
-213.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
They're the only team that can't hit at home. I mean, and they're at home. Yeah. I mean, that's the crazy thing is, I mean, they can't score more than 2 runs at home. And in that area, you think that they probably would. It feels like, as we come up on the All-Star break that we should kind of get a good grasp at where we're at. I don't think anyone's really surprised by any of the people that are actually leading the divisions, the Mets, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Astros, the Tigers, the Yanks. I don't think that blows anybody away. But it is interesting, and you brought up the Astros in June. I don't like the Cardinals. That's where my ex is from. I try not to play any games with them because when I play with them, they lose. And when I play against them, they win. I put my hands up and go, listen, I'll play you. I'm all on board your little train here. I think there's 6 or 7 games above 500. That's another one of those teams where they always, every single year, it seems like in August, they get on a hot streak and win 8-9 games in a row and pull themselves away. And I fully expect that to happen again this year. Any other teams, you guys? I certainly want to ask Kip because we're down here in the South. The Atlanta Braves, they've won 6 of their last 10. That's not going to pull them back in. But do you see any changes going on from a pitching standpoint, certainly from a hitting standpoint? You brought up a couple games. God love you. They had the bases loaded twice with nobody out and couldn't score a run.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Last night was the worst game I've seen them play all year, and they've played some bad ones. But they are just finishing a 7-game trip, and they literally mailed it in last night. They mustered nothing. They were going 3 up, 3 down, only seeing 6 or 8 pitches an inning. The starter for the Mets got hurt in the 3rd inning with 1 out. They brought a kid in that had only thrown 1 time in the big leagues ever. He went 3 innings and shut them down completely.
By the way, the starter tore his Achilles.
Exactly. Yeah, he probably had a sore calf. But, the bottom line is this team is just too laid back, and you know, we're just the consummate professionals, and we don't have any sense of urgency. They probably got the fastest lineup in, and even bench support in the league. They never run. They play for the three-run homer, and they're just not getting it. You know, they did. They won their first five in a row against the Mets. They fell flat on their face the last two nights. They got the Phillies for a three-game series in Atlanta this weekend. They've got Bryce Elder on the mound tonight. Losing Chris Sale is devastating because he was throwing better than he ever had in his career in his last seven starts, and his career is Hall of Fame-esque. Nice. So, it's just not their year. I think if they do not do well this weekend and in the next week, they have a 9-game homestand, their longest of the season. If they don't do well, I think they're going to be sellers, which is going to cause a lot of panic in Atlanta. And I'm still on the Snitker did a good job. He's an organizational guy, but you know, he's in his 70s. It's about time for him to go to the house, get a young guy, kind of fiery, because this team is just so blasé. It's hard for me to even watch him, and I've been watching him for 50 years.
Yeah, his inner Bobby Cox is coming out for sure. We're going to get into some college football. We can't wait. We got about 8 weeks until college football season starts. So we want to throw you out a couple little nuggets every single week as we prepare and get ready. So when you get into the college football season, not only do you understand why we're coming up with the plays on K4Wins, but you actually make some money doing that. I did want to start real quick. I'll start with Case. A&M, Florida, Kentucky on total wins. A&M 7.5 to 8.5. Florida 7.5 to 6.5. Kentucky 4.5 to 5.5. What kind of money does it take to move an entire game when you're talking about futures bets?
Let's see. Well, I think we might have mentioned it off stage, but I'm mainly looking at the Circa numbers at this point of the year. They're taking the biggest bets. It's the biggest market. Actually, they haven't moved a game on any of those teams. Actually, there's been very little movement, even juice wise, on any of those teams. Kentucky actually is taking a little bit of over money, which surprises me. I wouldn't be surprised. Shot. I think Kentucky's going to be the worst team in the SEC this year.
I agree.
They're 4.5 -120 over, under even. Usually it just takes one max bet at this time of the year to move at least some. Usually it's just the juice, not the actual win. We were talking before we came on right now, Circa, no questions asked. I can log on to the app right now and bet 5,000 on any of these teams. They always say if you come up to the counter and talk to them, they'll probably give you more. So it's probably not out of the question that they would take like a $20,000 bet on one of these teams. And if you bet like 20,000, maybe they move it a half win. But yeah, I'd say typically you're going to see a little bit of movement with any max bet. So if someone respected too, it's all how you're profiled in their system. If you're profiled as a winner or a respected bettor and you put 5,000 on, let's say Kentucky under 4.5 even money right now, I got to think that even money probably goes to like -110.
Before we get into some head scratches, I want to go to you, Kai. Texas, Georgia, Alabama, all this morning, 9.5 over under on wins. Who's got the better shot to go over or under of those three teams? Three big dogs in the SEC.
Texas.
You guys agree?
I'm always price dependent. I gotta say that it's hard not to have them as the best on paper number wise, but right now Circa 9.5 -180. No way I'm laying -180. My big, I talked about this on the starting lineup last week, so sorry if I'm repeating myself, but my big thought for the SEC this year, I know it might be unpopular, but the market is saying Texas and Georgia are in a tier on their own. I completely disagree. I like Alabama the best of the three, especially right now, 9.5 even money. I would be, if I had to make one of those bets, I lay even money over 9.5 with Alabama, overlaying -180 with Texas any day.
I didn't say I was
going
to bet.
I wasn't going at you. I just, my thing is, I'm very high on Alabama, and I don't think that they're in a separate tier from Georgia and Texas as the market would lead you to believe.
Well, and let's look at it practically too. Texas first game at Columbus against Ohio State. When I break down the schedule and look at all the games, I don't really say, okay, they're going to win this one, they're going to lose this one. I look for those vulnerable spots where it's a game that I feel like they could lose. And as far as the Texas column, the game at Ohio State, the game at Georgia, Oklahoma is – I think Oklahoma is one of the most fascinating teams coming into this year, and I'll be interested to hear you guys' thoughts on this with Mateer and his coach Arbuckle coming in there. If that transforms them offensively, and they're supposed to have a lot of receivers back that they didn't have available all last year, And I don't think Oklahoma's defense was really that shoddy last year. So probably a lot to work with there. I think Oklahoma's the X factor that's going to determine a lot of these over-unders because, of course, Texas has them. And, you know, those are all, in my opinion, kind of vulnerable spots. So, you know, I don't think Texas A&M is going to be that big a deal for them. But remember, last year, Texas had their easiest schedule in the league because they played all five bottom feeders of the SEC, and they've got them all again this year because the schedule's the same as far as your league schedule this year. So I don't disagree with Ty or Kai, but I still think that there are some vulnerabilities there that could sink you in the 9.5, but I've only got three major ones laid out here. And so that I would agree that they're probably the most likely to achieve that.
The over under for Oklahoma 6.5 as of right now. And to your point, a lot of people I think are liking the over that. Let's go team by team. Just kind of give me your nods. We'll go around the horn, start with Case, Kai, and Kip. Start with Texas 9.5, Case.
I mean, if it was even money both ways, I would say over. I do think on paper they're the best team, so I don't disagree with Kai on that. But right now, I mean, if I can get like under 9.5 plus 150, especially with game one at Ohio State, I this is not one I'm going to bet, but I'd ever so slightly at price lean under right now.
All right, Kai?
Over. Texas?
Over. Kip?
Over.
Yeah, I'm gonna say over just because I think they'll win one out of those three that I just mentioned at Georgia, at Ohio State, or against Oklahoma and Dallas. So right now, grudgingly, I'll say over.
By the way,
hey, give Sarkisian all summer to get ready for Ohio State. Yeah. I got it at 3.5. I looked at the line today; it's 3. I've already played Texas. Absolutely think they go to Ohio State and win the game by a touchdown plus.
And as an SEC guy, I would love every minute of that.
No, there's no doubt. And this is the first time I can't remember when we have not had an SEC team with a total of double digits or more. Forever. I can't remember the last time I haven't seen a 10 or 11. Georgia, 9.5, Case.
I mean, again, this is all price dependent to me. It throws the math so much. If either of these teams are minus 110 over, if it's just a coin flip, I'm taking the over. But right now, Georgia, like Texas, minus 180 to the over. I'm not a huge fan of their quarterback, as you can remember from last year. I love Notre Dame in that game. I do think it looks like they've done some good things in the transfer portal, but this is another one where just at price, ever so slightly and under. I'll also add on Texas. I know people are going to think I'm crazy because he's so low, but if you think Texas is going to Ohio State and winning, I recommend right now betting Arch Manning to win Heisman because that price is going to be long gone if he goes into Columbus and beats the defending national champions, which I'm hoping doesn't happen because I don't have any Arch Manning exposure, but we'll see.
Great point. Great point. Kai?
Georgia 9.5? You know, this would just be heart because I hate Georgia almost as much as I hate Alabama. And I think Texas is going to beat them. So I think Kirby Smart is going to screw a game up for Georgia. I do not like the quarterback situation at Georgia. Yes, they've done some good portal things. I think their defense is going to take a huge dip this year. I got under 9.5.
Under 9.5. And Kip?
Yeah, I mean, I've got them vulnerable, of course, in the Texas and Alabama games, although they're both in Athens. At Auburn, they have been known not to fare too well. And, of course, and another one of the real linchpin teams is Florida this year. I'm still not sure they're going to be all that. If you talk to a Gator fan, they're, you know, planning on making their playoff reservations. But those are all vulnerable spots. So if they go 2-2, they could still fulfill that. But even though I'm kind of Georgia-oriented, I would say right now, if you actually just absolutely force me, I would have to probably bet the under.
First time, and I think over a dozen years, the Crimson Tide, not double-digit over-under wins, 9.5, Case. What you got?
Over. Most returners in the trenches, I know quarterback's kind of a question, but I think there's a chance that they get even better play, that it fits better with DeBoer, and especially Grubb coming back now. I feel like I'm going to be negative on this. I'm usually betting unders, and I think typically it's a better bet to bet unders if you just do the math because more people bet the overs. But this is one where I like the over. I'm going to be on Alabama. And I bet the only bet I've made in the SEC so far, Alabama, I got 6-1 to win the conference. I love that if you can still find it.
Kai?
You know, legend says Ty Simpson, and a lot of my Bammer friends say that this guy is the next coming of Joe Namath. So they're happy. You know, the change in coordinators and the people that Washington is, or Washington, that DeBoer has brought in. I do not think he's a great coach in games. I do not. I think he makes some bad decisions in games. That being said, over.
Kip?
Yeah, they don't have that many vulnerable spots, so they probably will be over. But I'm a little, and I'm interested to hear what your guys' take on this is. Did I read right that Florida State's over under total for the year is 9 after that horrendous year last year?
Because it was 7.5. I got it at 6.5 right now. Okay,
because I don't know. Case, I was looking on the Vegas Insider site. They got all kinds of weird numbers. And you told me the other day that you thought maybe those are conference wins. But it'll have Georgia at the top of the list or Alabama at 10.5, 9.5 Texas. And then all of a sudden you get down to Florida State. They had 9. I was going, that can't be right.
So I think one of the big national sports books might open 9. I haven't done ACC work yet, so I can't speak that much on it. But I will say Florida State under, some of these groups that bet big money don't even come in until they can get more money down in August.
Okay.
I know they released like 2 or 3, and Florida State under got absolutely smashed. I think it's down to like 6 some places now. There is a lot of negativity, at least in the sharp betting community around this team. So I wouldn't be surprised if like a DraftKings or FanDuel open 9. But yeah, it is a lot lower now. And if you believe the guys that are doing this at the highest level, Florida State's in for another rough season.
We will go through some of those other games too, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say Florida State and Alabama, that is not a neutral site game like Alabama fans are used to. That is in Tallahassee. And, you know, they're not going to be 2-10 again. Last year, they were in a top 10 team and only won 2 games. So I don't know if they're going to make drastic improvement, but I don't think Alabama's an absolute lock. I think they're a 12 or 13 early favorite, but I don't think that's a for sure win for them. And Alabama also has a road game at South Carolina, and Lenora Sellers and the Gamecocks, another one of those teams that could really have a lot to say about how the upper tier do. So, I mean, I think Vegas is very skilled at setting these numbers because Alabama's almost for sure going to be 10-2 or 9-3. And if you're a futures bettor, it makes a big difference which one of those is the reality.
According to the numbers I saw this morning, only 4 teams in college football have double-digit over-under lines, which I couldn't remember. It sounds like this is going to be a muddy year for everyone. We'll see if they got it right. We're going to go to the SEC, and then we'll go through some of these other games. We got time. We got 8 weeks till college football season starts. Let's go Ole Miss, 8.5. Interesting year for Lane Kiffin and his boys. What you got, Case? Case, you there?
Uh-oh, do we lose him?
I cut out Tony for a second. I know he said Ole Miss. This is another one I'm actually a little bit more optimistic on. I'll say over 8.5. I know some people are expecting some decline with a new quarterback in there, but there's a lot of hype on this kid too, and they kill it in the transfer portal every year. I think one of these years it's all going to come together, and they're really going to smash it. I think their schedule is a little more forgiving compared to some other teams.
Yes, it
so
is.
I will. I'll say over 8.5.
Kai.
You know, they came out fourth in the transfer portal in the rankings. They seem to pull something off every year. I can't go over because I think Lane Kiffin is going to be stupid and go for some dumb fourth downs where he should just kick a field goal and he could win games. He did it last year. I get your metrics or whatever. Well, how about this? When you're inside the 30 and it's 4th and 12, kick the damn field goal, get the 3 points, and move on. It's okay, Lane. Get the 3. He gave up. I think I saw a stat where they said he gave up over 60 points last year in games going for it and missing.
Kip.
Yeah, I only got a couple vulnerable spots for them. I think they're going to get mauled when they go to Georgia because that's going to be a payback game. They've got Oklahoma once again, which is kind of on my watch list of all these teams that play them this year because I don't know what they're going to be bringing to the table. And they've got LSU back in Oxford. That was another really painful loss for them last year. And Florida, that's the games on their schedule. So they don't have to play Texas. They don't have to play Alabama. So I'm going to say right now, over.
Brian Kelly and LSU, 8.5, another 8.5. Case.
This is one that's going to torment me. You know, I'm a numbers guy, and I have my numbers here. I only came out with them at 8.35 wins, so that would technically be an under. But this is one where I have to weigh my intuition against my numbers. And I I sat with a scout during the LSU USC game last year, and he was telling me like Nussmeier has all the tools. He could be a top five guy. And that really blew me, the draft guy, and that really blew me away at the time. And then watching him, it's just been hard to get out of my head. So I really think he's going to have a big year. I think if you listen into what Brian Kelly is saying this year, he was so negative going into the last couple of years. That's why I always kick myself going into that Florida State game that I bet LSU, because he was telling you our secondary sucks. We didn't get good kids in the portal. This year, he sounds really optimistic. He really likes his team. So this is going against my numbers, but just my intuition is I think it kind of comes together. And I don't necessarily trust Kelly fully right now. I know there's murmurs in the industry that he's not working as hard as some of these other guys. He's kind of got one foot out the door. But I think this is going to be hard to mess up. So I probably won't bet it because I'm still kind of a slave to my numbers. But if I had to make a pick right now, I'm going over.
I'm not
going
to Gus Malzahn on him, but if you follow Kelly when he was at Notre Dame, whenever he talked big, that's when you ran out the door. But when he was talking like his team sucked, it's because his team sucked. And then all of a sudden it felt like he maybe was out the door anyway. So he's like, hey, listen, I think we're going to have a great season. We'd get his fan base behind him. And then we'd lose a game he's not supposed to. Kai, what you think?
I don't like Brian Kelly. Under.
Under. And Kip.
Yeah, at Clemson, at Alabama, at Oklahoma, at Ole Miss. Under.
One I saw that opened up at 7.5 and 8.5. That's the numbers I just saw this morning when I pulled up SEC wins. It was from Vegas Insider. But 7.5 to 8.5. So we can play whatever you want. Case, pick a number and tell me which way you're going to go.
On who?
On who?
On A&M. I'm sorry, A&M. 7.5 to 8.5.
On A&M, yeah, I have it circa 8, minus 120, over, even under. I have them at 7.9. So this is really just a straight coin flip to me. I feel like you've hit on a lot of teams I'm optimistic on, so I got to be back to my negative self. I guess I'll go under, but I really have no opinion on this one.
Kai?
Because I hate doing this, you know, in June, and I know you're supposed to do it earlier, but I'm still really, really researching into a lot of these, and then I also want to see what happens in fall camp with some of these guys with quarterback battles and some of those things, and I just do not have a good feel either way on A&M. If I was going to bet it, I would bet under, right, if you put a gun to my head.
Kip?
Yeah, I don't think they're that loaded. And, you know, Marcel Reed had a couple good games, but I don't really know if he's the real answer. They have to go to Texas, so that's, you know, pretty much they weren't even competitive with them last year at home, which was probably the most disappointing performance I saw out of any team. So I don't know. They were kind of a pretender last year and faded down the stretch. I don't like that. I just don't know if this is a really top-tier SEC team. I'm going to go under.
I was driving down Interstate 65 yesterday, and I saw a guy with a orange and white checkered Tennessee Ford Fusion. The most hideous looking vehicle. I'm thinking, dude, if you're going to put Tennessee all over your vehicle, at least drive something better than a Ford Fusion. Tennessee 8.5. Case, what do you got?
I got to say under. This is one where the numbers are going to look better than they are, but I think with the change in quarterback, I don't know if I'm a huge Joey Aguilar in the SEC guy. I feel like this is kind of a year where, you know, I don't want to say rebuildings. I don't think they're going to be terrible at all, but I think this is where they kind of get it together for a run in the next couple years. It's kind of a transition year. I think they'll probably be like 7-5 if I had to guess.
Kai, please tell me you've done some research on Tennessee. I know it's early.
Yeah, and I disagree just in one thing. I think Aguilar is actually going to do better than Nico, because Nico was a huge disappointment to Tennessee last year. He missed more throws than he made. Yes, all the hype coming in, supposed to be great and all that, he just wasn't. I don't know that this guy is a whole lot better. But where's the Tennessee-Florida game this year?
It is at Florida.
There you go. Tennessee loses 8-4.
That's about right. I think so, because they're at Florida, they're at Alabama, they've got Oklahoma. They should beat Syracuse that first game, but I don't, you know, until I see a team, I don't think that's an automatic winner. And they do get Georgia at home in week 3, which is very unusual for Tennessee and Georgia to play that early. So, I mean, there's some vulnerable spots on the schedule, but I think 8-4 is about right.
I just wanted to throw in real quick. I feel like they lost more than people realize too. The whole line looks different. They lost Sampson, who was their whole offense. And I got to tell you, I've been at every Raiders practice. Dante Thornton's been like the best player on the field. So I don't know what Kai thinks about him as a Tennessee player, but he was a starter by the end of minicamp, which really surprised everyone. I think they might miss him more than from seeing him up close. seems like they're going to miss him more than maybe people realize.
Nico couldn't throw him a damn ball. When he threw it deep, he overthrew him. When he threw it over the middle, he threw it 100 miles an hour and missed him. I mean, the bottom line is I agree. Samson is the biggest loss. Now, the offensive line was eh, but Samson is the biggest loss. I mean, they just turned around and gave him the ball anytime they got in trouble. I totally agree.
Danny Hugh Freeze, first year 6-7, then 5-7. He is 5-11 in his 2 years in the SEC with the Auburn Tigers. His over-under is 7.5. We're going to start with Kai Gregory, and we'll wait on Case to come back. Kai, what you got?
Under. They picked up a lot of great players, but I don't know, man. Since Hugh Freeze has gotten to Auburn, I don't think he's been very good, and I do think he's got a better offense, better quarterback. He's going to have better play.
Let me ask you this. Are you surprised? I'm really surprised because I thought the hire was really good. I just thought it was a good fit. He looks like an Auburn guy. No?
I do not. I thought it was a horrible hire. He has lived on beating Alabama a few times for 10 years now. He is not a good coach. Just my opinion.
Kip, your thought, over under 7.5.
You know, they've got they don't play 5 straight home games to start this year. They start on the road at Baylor, which you talk to Auburn fans and they say, oh, we'll beat Baylor. Well, Baylor's was pretty decent last year in gaining steam by the end of the season. They also have back-to-back. Okay, let's talk about weeks 3, 4, and 5. They do have a bye after these two road games. They're back-to-back on the road at Texas A&M and at Oklahoma in games 3 and 4 this year. Then they take a week off, and then they play Georgia, which at Jordan-Hare is a game they could possibly win. They also play Alabama, of course, later in the year. But, I mean, I see almost automatically 5 losses. They later go to at – they play at Arkansas and at Vanderbilt, both those teams who beat them last year. And Case was talking about coaches' body language and expectation. Did you guys hear what Hugh Freeze said when asked about his expectation? Well, we just got to make a bowl game. Well, so you's really basically calling for 6-6.
No, you don't.
Under.
he makes a bowl game this year, he's getting his ass fired. He is done. If he wins 6 or 7 games this year, he's going to have to do better. He's going to have to go beyond expectations. And if expectations are 7.5, he better win 8 games. And I don't know if I see that happening. What's your thoughts, Case?
I've got 8 -110 both ways at Circa. I guess I get to channel my Kai here. I do think there's some things pointing up in their direction. They were last in the nation in turnover luck. I have them last year. That's for sure going to even out. They're going to be better than that. But I do not think in this day and age, Hugh Freeze is a very good coach. I do think he was doing some cutting edge, ahead of the times things at Ole Miss. But everyone's caught up now. I just don't trust Hugh Freeze. So that's the tiebreaker to me. I'm going under.
And do you guys really think Jackson Arnold proved anything at Oklahoma while he was there? You talked to an Auburn fan here, and of course all fans are optimistic. Well, now we got Jackson Arnold, and I feel like saying, okay, so what? He had the one good half against Alabama only because he ran the ball a few times. They did nothing in the second half of that game. And then they lost spectacularly their last two games. Maybe I'm missing something. Jackson Arnold played a great game against Texas a couple of years ago. I guess that was him. Maybe I'm thinking of the wrong quarterback, but what do you guys think about Jackson Arnold?
I don't know. I think people get this idea that if you're getting a transfer, you're getting something good every time. I feel like you're stealing a player from one team to the next, and I think automatically he must be good, and it's not the case. It's not.
Hey, Tony, before we get too deep, I wanted to throw something out just so we don't run out of time for people to look at. In week one, some games just really love, just want to do it. I got Nevada plus 49 at Penn State. It's down to 46. Still loving that. Indiana's team total to go over against ODU. I think Baylor wins the game against Auburn. They're catching 3. And Case will have more insight on this. I love Kansas minus 14 against Fresno State. And I got Stanford minus 1. It's up to 2 at Hawaii in week one games. Not to mention the other ones that we talked about.
We're definitely going to get into a lot of those games. And obviously, if you can get on board and get a little better price, and I know Case is all about that, we'll certainly get into those games with about 8 weeks to go. I did want to get into just a couple of more over-unders real quick because we have – 7 or 8 teams left. But South Carolina, Mizzou, and Florida all at 7.5. Case kind of run around that horn a little bit. Anything striking you, those 3 teams?
I really like South Carolina under, and I was Mr. South Carolina last year. I feel like picking them every game. But I don't know. There's all this hype around Lenore Sellers coming back, and yeah, he was good, but I really think what separated them was their defense last year. They had like, what, I think five guys drafted. That's a lot to rebuild for South Carolina. They hit in the transfer portal last year, but the transfer portal give it, the transfer portal take it away. I feel like they probably have a dip there. So I like South Carolina under 7.5. Missouri, I want to like under 7.5, but once again, they have the easiest schedule in the SEC. So maybe
they always have the easiest schedule in the SEC. Every year they have the easiest schedule.
I guess I'd have to go under, but it's probably not what I'm going to bet. And what was the third team you asked?
Florida, 7.5.
I'm just kind of DJ Lagway kind of has me. I just, the way he improved from when he first started last year to the end of the year, I know he's dealing with a shoulder injury now. So I think I talked about last week, I want to see what the practice reports are like. But I really think this kid could be special and lift them up. So it's not one I'm running to bet either, but there's some 7.5 even money I would have to lean over on that.
Kyle, your thoughts on those three?
I agree with them on all three. I think Florida, you have to take over 7.5. I wish it was a different coaching situation, because if anything's going to hurt them, in my opinion, it's the head coach. I know I've kind of gotten on that a lot here, but I just don't. Since he's come to Florida, he's done nothing. And he has hit his train to DJ Lagway, and they're going to go as far as DJ Lagway takes them.
Kip.
Florida is at Miami, at Ole Miss, at LSU, at Texas A&M. They're going to lose at least two of those. And they, of course, they play Georgia in the cocktail party. That's a lot of vulnerability. They could lose four games this year, so that would put them pretty much right on the number. As far as the others, I don't think Missouri's going to be very good. They've got the backup quarterback from Penn State, who transferred before the team even engaged in the playoffs, Pribula, who I know nothing about. Saw him a little bit last year when Aller was hurt for a game or two. But I think they've lost Burden. They've lost Cook. I just don't think they're going to be very good. And I think it's Drinkwitz on his way out. And the other one you mentioned was South Carolina. They've got tough spots on their schedule too. So I'm not real high on them this year, despite the fact that I really like Lenora Sellers. But Case is right. They lost four of their front seven, and those guys were dominant last year.
By the way, that first game against Miami, the U, 9.5, they're over under. We'll get into some of those futures a little later on in the next couple of weeks. I did want to throw out one other, because you've talked a lot about it. We trashed Oklahoma in the starting lineup all year long last year.
They were so bad.
They're over under 6.5. Kip, I'm assuming you like the over this year.
Yeah, because I've got to think they're going to make an offensive transformation. They just couldn't score points. They were hurt, and again, Jackson Arnold just didn't have any answers. But I think they're going to sneak up on some people this year. 6.5 is pretty skimpy, although their schedule's demanding.
Guy, your thoughts on Oklahoma? You got anything?
I think they'll get. You said it was 6.5.
6.5.
I think they'll get the 7 wins. They did not, I think it was even in preseason, they did not have a game last year where they had where they even had a healthy wide receiver core. And, you know, that kills you when they know you're throwing to somebody that doesn't even really know what they're doing. I think they'll get to 7 wins.
We'll sprinkle some more SEC football as well as college football, period. It'll be here before you know it. We're going to be on live again next Tuesday, 10 o'clock Central, 11 o'clock Eastern, K4Wins.com, K4Wins.com, K4Winners on X. Make sure you capitalize that K and that W at Coastal Sports Network. Thanks to those fine folks, Angel and the entire crew, for helping us come on every single week. We really appreciate it. We'll do it again next Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. If you got some email questions for us, we're available to be found everywhere. And make sure you go to K4Wins.com. It's a free site. You can subscribe to it. And we're going to have close to 1,000 wins if we keep our record straight going into August, which is pretty incredible for the first year. So great work, guys. We appreciate you. Till next week. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.